Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
The 2014 Sundance Film Festival will be taking place from January 16th through January 26th in Park City, Salt Lake City, Ogden, and at the Sundance Resort. Individual tickets are now available to Utah locals. Visit sundance.org/festival/locals.
I'm Dan Malin, and this is Soundwaves from the Underground, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug is an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, and it is one of the oldest independent publications in the United States, distributing free monthly issues about music, art, action, sports, and subculture. In this episode, we talk to local musician Lindsay Heath about the music you're hearing over our new episodes. We'll talk to the Salt Lake DJ and production folks, and we'll talk about Orphan Thanksgiving. It's not nearly as sad as it sounds. Well, everybody who has tuned in obviously heard our spanking brand new awesome theme music penned by the woman who is joining us right now, Lindsay Heath. First, thank you so much for coming into the beautiful Soundwaves basement. We're really excited to have you here.
I really like it down here,
It's not a bad space.
No, it's pretty cool.
It's pretty warm still because it's early November as we record this, and it's not going to be too bad. But why don't we just start right at a natural point of how did this sort of come about? I mean, was it a matter of our producer, Gavin, or Angela approaching you and saying, hey, we're thinking of some new music, you know, what do you think? And was it something that you wrote specifically for the podcast?
Yes to both. Angela had me come down. I met with her and Gavin, and they asked me if I'd be interested in doing a theme song and also music for the interviews, which was an honor, and I was totally stoked to do it. I've done a few songs for it that I submitted. And then as far as the theme song went, the initial songs that I did, I didn't have in mind for the theme song. I wanted to do something really cool for that. I wrote a few different songs with the theme song in mind, and I booked a session with Mike Sasich, local sound engineer.
Yeah.
And when I got down to his studio, I'd had these songs prepared to record, and last minute, suddenly I was compelled to just make something in the moment.
Nice.
So
inspiration strikes.
Yeah, and Mike's always down for that. He's cool like that. So we sat down, he set up some mics, and I sat at the drums, he plugged in his guitar. We just kind of, am I allowed to swear?
Yeah, absolutely.
We fucked around for a few minutes, just making noise, and instantaneously, this song just kind of happened.
Nice.
It just, out of nowhere, from the ether, just manifested for us. So
love it.
Yeah, and we played it through a couple times, got the foundation down, and then Mike went over it a few times with guitar layers until we had this massive kind of monster, rad sound.
Riffage.
Yeah.
Major riffage.
Yeah, and I got to bash the drums around and put some tambourine on.
Nice. Now, had you done anything? I mean, I guess the only thing I could compare it to as from a layman, non-musician, is like doing soundtrack work, essentially.
Right.
I mean, you're kind of imagining this whatever you imagine. I mean, had you done any of that kind of stuff before?
I have. I did a score. I did a partial score for a film a couple years ago. I can't even think of the name right now. No, it doesn't matter. Don't see it. It sucks anyway. But I had some experience doing this kind of thing. Mike has a lot of experience doing this. He's been doing a lot of jingles for commercials and television programs.
Okay.
So it just came about so easily, you know, and we had that in mind, like, let's do something really rockin' and cool for Soundwaves, you know.
Right.
And it just happened.
That's great energy, obviously, that we want people to associate with it, of course.
Totally.
It sounds great. What is the process like, or how does it differ, I guess, versus, you know, you're working on your own music, say, or doing writing what you consider a song versus sort of soundtracky stuff?
Right.
I mean, how different is it for you as the musician?
It was definitely a new experience for me. I'm generally used to sitting at the piano, you know, taking my sweet time, working it, and then messing around with the guitar. And then, you know, I generally write for all the instrumentation.
Right.
So it was really fun to collaborate on this one. Yeah, it was more just keeping in mind the general goal of getting something cool for sound waves, which definitely changed the medium for me. It's not something I would have come up with on my own.
Right.
You know, it's kind of a stray from what I do personally for my own music. I've got kind of a goth, you know, slow tempo, sad. That's generally the direction I blame my inner goth.
Not the vibe you're going for on this one. So you're kind of thinking more like the target audience plus the show kind of thing.
Yes.
I mean, and you probably, when you're writing for yourself, obviously we all get to enjoy what you write on your own. But,
hopefully.
So that's interesting that you got to kind of think extrovertedly, I guess. Is
yes,
the way to put
absolutely.
It. Nice. Well, why don't we talk a little about what you are working on? People, I'm sure, know you from myriad projects through the years here in Salt Lake.
Mm-hmm.
Where are we here at the end of 2013? What's Lindsay Heath up to, musically speaking?
I just completed my full length. My first legit full length. I've recorded some full lengths in the past, and I was never totally satisfied with the way it turned out. So I also worked with Mike Sasich on this full length, but for this one, I wrote all of the instrumentation, you know, all the songs, all the instrumentation, really put my whole heart and soul into it. And we just mixed and mastered.
Oh, nice.
So I'm in the process of trying to figure out how the hell I'm going to afford to print
all the other parts of it.
Exactly. Exactly. But I've got it finished and I feel good about it.
What is it about this one that you're sort of looking at it that way as your first sort of legit full length versus past projects you've been involved with? Where, I mean, you've collaborated with other people and you've done lots of different things.
Mm-hmm.
Is it because it's so personal and it's all you, or?
Yeah, actually. Yeah, that's mainly it. In the past, I would invite talented musicians to come in and just kind of interpret it their own way and play what they were inspired to play. And I did that several times and finally realized, like, no, I know what I want this to sound
right.
like. I know what I want this person to play. I need to not be so shy about saying, like,
right.
Just
it's your name
this.
Going on.
Yeah,
it. Let's have it.
Cash Tolman really helped me with that. He's always been like a mentor to me. Cash is from Iceburn, and I'm sure everybody knows who Cash Tolman is. But he came in toward the end of that phase of allowing everyone to play whatever they want, and he was like, "What are you doing?" He's like, "You tell me what to play. This is your song, you know." So
right.
It really changed the game for me. And.
Nice.
And this one, I really took control of every part of it.
Awesome. So what is the next step? I mean, you have this thing recorded. Is it just a matter of getting out there, finding a way to pay for the printing or to get it out there? Or are you kind of shopping it around a little? Or what do you think?
I have sent it out to a few labels. I've sent it out to a few close friends. And so I was going to see what happens with that. I'm waiting on the album art still, actually. A really talented artist, Carmen Hawk, did photography for this record. So
That's
part of what I'm waiting on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Are you going to do any kind of live stuff in between or kind of while you're waiting? Or is it a matter of, I mean, not necessarily playing the new songs. You might want to save those up for a burst of activity when the record does come out. But anything live on the horizon?
Not at the moment, actually. I'm still working with Mike in the studio. I'm doing new recordings and trying to get together a great record release show. So
nice.
Working on that performance. I've got big ideas for that.
Awesome. So probably looking at like 2014, maybe?
Most likely, yeah.
Awesome. Well, Lindsay, thank you so much for coming in. Thank you so much for the awesome new song we're going to be playing for years on end now on every episode, and the music behind our interviews and everything. It's such a treat to have you in here, and let's do it again when the record's ready to come out and we'll get it going.
My pleasure.
Everybody, you can go find Lindsay. Give her a search on Facebook or on Instagram. Search for Lindsay Heath, and you can track down some of her older music and what she's up to right now. Max Payne and the Groovies are a five-piece rock band based right here in Salt Lake City. They originally formed back in late 2009 and played, goddamn, they played a lot of shows, weekly showcases, seemingly all accompanied with lead singer Slave breathing fire all over the crowd. They released their debut album in the fall of 2010. They followed up with the Tortilla Gold EP in November 2011, and they just recorded their self-titled EP with Mike Sasage and released it on Halloween through their Bandcamp. Here's a song called Waves off of that self-titled Max Payne and the Groovies EP.
Here's a taste of the
looking good.
To download the new EP for a mere $5, check them out at maxpayneandthegroovies.bandcamp.com. And for more information on the band, just search for Max Payne and the Groovies on Facebook. Salt Lake DJ and Production is an educational DJ company based right here in Salt Lake City. They take kids and aspiring DJs through lots of courses, show them all the techniques they need, tricks of the trade, show them what's up in software and hardware to use, and they work them with professional DJs from all over the city to help the kids learn the skills they'll need to do their own thing. They offer a wide range of courses, including the fundamentals, production, mixing and mastering, even a course of how to scratch properly. Slug writer Kia McGinnish sat down with founder Derek Beck to talk about the SLDP.
How did it all come together? Whose idea was it, and how did you get started?
Well, I've been teaching for a lot longer than SLDP has even been around, and been producing and DJing for most of my life, for probably about 10 years. I've always had people asking me, how do you do this? How did you get this sound? How did you produce this record? And I just realized that, I mean, it'd be not only fun, because I enjoyed doing that, I enjoyed teaching, but it would be fun to open up to more markets. Basically, anybody who wanted to learn how to DJ or produce music, to start from there, start advertising, and see who was interested. And so it kind of started out as an experiment, and just as students started coming in, I realized that there was a lot bigger market for it, a lot of word of mouth, a lot of people said, hey, I know four or five other people that want to do this, and just they just got the gist of the programs. And some of them, I mean, as of right now, we have in between students that are actually going or scheduled to go or have like a set date, it's around 30 students, so.
30?
Growing pretty quickly, yeah.
Cool. Where are you located in Salt Lake?
Well, originally we were basically operating, all the people that were helping me, the instructors, we were operating out of our own individual studios, but we've just moved into a new space there on 430 East South Temple. So right there in the downtown area. It's a great space. It's 1,300 square feet, and we're in the process of not only moving in, but remodeling, basically setting everything up. So there's three individual teaching rooms, and then a main room for, we like to call it DJ Showcase, which is kind of a cool name for a recital, where you can basically be able to show off your skills for friends and family, and also have more than the one-on-one, could be like a good 6 to 10 to 15 students inside of a weekend workshop, something that where one instructor is instructing more students, so it's a little bit bigger of a classroom area.
Would you say most of your students are younger people or older people, and what kind of experience level do they come from?
Honestly, I have usually when someone comes in, because every time a student wants to is interested in learning, we tell them they can come by for a free consultation just to check everything out, meet with an instructor, see what we're capable of, because I know a lot of people, they're like, okay, who am I going to be learning from? Does this person have any knowledge of this whatsoever? So we do that, and to kind of get students familiarized so they can kind of know what they're jumping into. And basically every time I do that, I get that same question, is this right for me? I have no experience, is it possible for me to be successful? I've always said yes, because basically our students right now, I think last time I checked, I don't ask everyone's age, but I'm assuming, I'm guessing somewhere pretty close to 40 is the max that I think I have right now. It could be more, it could be a little bit less, but that's my estimate. And then clear down to 12 years old. So and from backgrounds, I mean, a lot of people have come from, like, all they know is piano lessons. About the same amount as that came from piano lessons came from no background at all, no music, just love music and would just like to know how it's made, okay, how to perform. And also all sorts of different backgrounds. Everything from people that work for the mayor. We have a guy that works for the mayor, that's one of the mayor's close advisors, that's a student. A middle school teacher, kids that are still in elementary school, middle school, and clear up to DJs or producers that have been doing things but want to expand their knowledge and kind of either go from the DJing realm into the production realm, or for the production realm into the live performance realm. So just about everybody across the board. And I think everybody loves music, and I think that's why it makes it so diverse, because a lot of people some days wake up and say, I love music, I'd like to learn how to make it. Maybe it's something I could do. And so I think that's where that comes from.
So you have five instructors, is that right?
Yes, as of right now. I mean, we're kind of transitioning over to that. I'm taking care of more of the managerial stuff as we start to bring on more students. But yes, as of right now, we have five instructors that are going to be able to fill their time accordingly. And that's, it's cool for them. And we're always open to seeing who else might want to be an instructor, because basically with our facility we're able to set times basically anytime, 24/7, when an instructor is available, can be able to teach. And so we're basically set that up so we have a bunch of different instructors covering a bunch of different range of subjects too. From some of them do more of the production, some of them do more of the DJing side, and so kind of can overlap, and then kind of schedule our students accordingly, and also work with our instructors to kind of help bring them over to the realm that they're not familiar with. If they're more production related, then we're going to help them work on the DJing side and kind of be able to expand and kind of just development altogether.
So were these people that you knew from Salt Lake, or just did you have people apply?
Yeah, some of them I had known before, I'd met before, and some of them we just randomly met. I remember one guy actually came in and wanted to work on a certain area, and actually came in to potentially be an SLDP student, and wanted to work on a certain area, but had a decent amount of skill in all these other areas. So to be able to start there and be able to start producing, and then that's why I think with the group of us, there might be some areas where one instructor might, I guess, need the help of another instructor, and so that's how we could schedule and be able to fill in all those gaps. And it's also nice to learn from multiple professionals, like if, regardless of what you're doing, if you're learning how to cut hair, I imagine if you learn from 5 different people, it helps your skill set immensely to learn from different people.
Can you just describe a typical lesson for me?
Yeah, a typical lesson, I mean, the first one, you'd come in and we just get going right with a piece of software, something you're going to be able to use to actually make music. And whether or not you actually have that piece of software, a lot of times our students will be taking courses and be kind of like working towards what they want to have for themselves software-wise. And that's a good thing too. A lot of people ask, do I need to have the software? Do I need to have a lot of things, a lot of tools before I start? And in reality, what the course is also letting you do is kind of experiment and see what different software and different controllers, different types of DJing, because there's millions of things you can DJ with, like millions of controllers, and maybe not millions, maybe it's not quite that many, but there's a lot of different ways you can DJ. So a student is able to find out what's going to work best for them instead of going out and spending $500,000 on equipment and then later finding out, okay, I like this style better, now I gotta sell that or buy something else. And so that's kind of where we start out, is basically getting into the software, seeing what the software can do, learning all the different parts, learning the different sections of the software, because you're gonna have a browser where you can, just like a browser on any computer, find your sounds, find your kick drums, your bass sounds, your guitar sounds, and basically pull them into your project. Then you're gonna have a part where you can arrange everything, and a part where you can add effects, and basically everything kind of works up to this final master track where the end of your song comes out, basically where you finish your song. And so a typical lesson is usually focused on one of those parts, whether we're trying to find sounds or whether we're trying to change our sound by adding effects and by doing different things to it, and kind of where it all leads. So we basically, every lesson focuses on understanding one specific concept, whether it's the whole routing, the whole signal flow of music inside a piece of software, because just like from that one end of a microphone to the part that you speak into, there's a signal there, there's a path there, and learning the pathway through the software and learning all those different parts would be a perfect example of the end goal of a single session, learning how all that stuff goes through. And so every session is designed to basically get towards that end goal of understanding a principle of music, whether it be part of the building blocks or whether it be some of the most advanced concepts in like the mixing and the mastering, basically the final steps.
What would be the main skills that you would hope your students would take away?
Definitely improvisation. Just being able to go and improvisation, but not necessarily with production and DJing itself, but just being able to improvise any situation. We want them to be fluent on, if they're looking to DJ, we want them to be fluent on any type of DJing system. So they could show up and say, if they showed up somewhere, or they just needed a DJ or needed a DJ in a club, and the student would be able to step up and do it because they know how to DJ. They know how to DJ on just about anything, because for the most part, even though there are thousands of different controllers and ways of doing it, they're not a thousand different ways, so to speak, different arrangements, I guess. So for a student to be able to understand how to do that on anything, whether it be CDJs or just normal vinyl, just basically how DJing started, vinyl records, to clear up to the electronic, the digital DJing of today's era. And for production, just be able to, I guess, make music creatively, make new genres of music, not necessarily copy anybody else just straight across, but take from individual parts. We want them to be able to analyze and say, okay, this is how this person's doing it. I can take kind of that same concept, not necessarily rip it off completely, but take that same concept that this producer or this DJ is using and kind of use it in my own production. And so basically to think creatively, to think outside the box, to think of different rhythms, different melodies, basically just do things and produce music in a creative way. And we hope that they will have the skills and the confidence to be able to go out and approach a club manager or approach a promoter or approach a company, basically set up their own business as far as either making music, performing music, just go out and to be able to do it in front of other people. And that's actually a big part of we're working on right now and basically have in place but kind of refining everything is our Kickstarter program, which we're going to basically set up a lot of different quote-unquote job placement type of opportunities for these students, whether it be an actual event in a local club or a local venue where the students can show up, no pressure, and be able to play, be able to perform their music. And there's no pressure if they mess up or if they do anything wrong. It'll just be more exciting because they're in that live environment, which is completely different than DJing from your bedroom, even if you're the only one in there. If there's nobody on the dance floor, it's completely different being there doing that. And so to provide an opportunity, and that's what surprises and excites most people. Like, I'm actually going to be able to go DJ in a club. I'm actually going to be able to invite 10 of my friends and take them to this club and be able to DJ, perform my music. It gets everyone excited. And so it's also a way for them to network with the promoters, with the club managers, be able to say, hey, I'm so-and-so, I'm working on music, I like this style of music, when would you guys have an opening? And to be able to make those contacts and be able to actually have an outlet for when they finish, not necessarily even when they finish, while they're still in the program, to be able to have opportunities to grow and start working with local people to start performing and all that stuff. So basically just have the skills and the confidence to go out there and be successful with music as a hobby or as a profession.
For more information on the company and to learn how to sign up for courses, check them out at saltlakedp.com.
Plan B Theater Company presents the world premiere of Eric Samuelson's Radio Hour Episode 8, Fariana, on December 3rd in the Gene Wagner Theater at the Rose, a holiday show about a holiday show performed as a radio show about the writers of a children's television show possessed by their own characters. Attendees to this performance become the live studio audience. Tickets and info at planbtheater.org.
This is your weekly daily calendar for the week beginning on November 12th and stretching to November 18th. Lots of goodies in there. As always, I'd encourage you to go to slugmag.com. Check out that calendar every damn day of the week. There's always lots of good stuff being added. Always all kinds of goodies going up for you to check out. I start on Tuesday, November 12th with Brett Denon, who's playing at the State Room. He's been through town a few times. Kind of a folk pop artist, but very high-quality singer-songwriter. Up and coming, he's moved from divey joints up to the State Room. We'll see where he is next time around. Wednesday, November 13th, a couple of big shows. Jessie Ware, British pop songstress, is over at In the Venue, while Anthony Green, lead singer from Cirque du Survive, he's doing a solo show out at the Murray Theater. Haven't been out to Murray Theater in a while, but I've seen some pretty damn good shows out that way. Friday, November 15th, a big reason to go down to ABG's in Provo. Not only is it a fine bar in itself, Utah County Swillers and legendary Porch Pounders, including our man Bad Brad Wheeler, they're joining forces for a show at ABG's on Friday. That'll be a fun one. Back up here in Salt Lake City, I highly recommend going to the Hollering Pine CD release party at the Garage. That's a few former Polka Dots, a former Trapper or two in there. Really fine honky-tonk stuff. I think you'll really like it. That's at the Garage on Friday night. Saturday, November 16th, Blitzen Trapper. They come through town a hell of a lot. While they're playing smaller places like Urban, they've opened big shows like for Wilco at Red Butte. They are playing at the State Room, headlining a show. Always a great live gig. Same night, Corner by Zombies, Eagle Twin, and Old Timer bringing a great show together at the Urban Lounge. And then on Monday, November 18th, Agrimonia, Sub Rosa, and Toad are at Bar Deluxe. Get some more death metal-y things into your head on a Monday night. That's your weekly daily calendar for November 12th through November 18th. You can always add your own events for free just by going to slugmag.com, or for a mere $5 a month, $50 a year, you can add some quality links to your content. Be sure to fire up slugmag.com every day of the week. As you hear this episode of the Soundwaves podcast, the Moth and the Flame are on tour in Europe, of all places. They're originally from Provo. They consist of Brandon Robbins on guitar, Mark Garbett on keys, and Andrew Tolman on drums. They released their self-titled debut album back in the fall of 2011, and they've toured nationally and around the region, sold out several shows at Velour. They've returned with an online-only EP titled And, that came out earlier this month. This is a song called Sorry. Information on the Moth and the Flame, visit them online at tmtfmusic.com. Every year at Thanksgiving time, there are people scattered all over the city who end up going through what we call an orphan Thanksgiving, either because they work in the service industry, they have a holiday-specific job, or they have no loved ones in the area to spend the holiday with. Hey, some of the best Thanksgivings I've had in my life were when I was spending an orphan Thanksgiving somewhere. In honor of those who are alone this time of year, we're going to bring you three stories of fun orphan Thanksgivings, two from locals who hit us up via Facebook and one from our own staffers. In order, we'll be listening to Frederick Robinson, Topher Horman, and Slug's Community Development Executive, Tim Cronenberg.
So last year was probably the ultimate orphan Thanksgiving for me. I've never really liked the holidays much just because of how overproduced they are. I've never really seen the point of it. I mean, I like the food and everything, that's great, don't get me wrong. So last year, I worked on Thanksgiving, which I found in a few years ago. Working on holidays is awesome because no one else is there, no one else can bother you. There are generally no emails to respond to, so I get so much more work done on holidays than I do on normal days. And worked Thanksgiving, I brought my dog into my studio where I work and was having a great day. And my friend, who also was working that day, he and I had been in discussion about getting Thanksgiving dinner together since we knew that we were both going to be working. So about 5 o'clock rolled around and called him to see if he had made any plans yet, which of course he hadn't, and figured that we would try finding a Thai restaurant because we thought, okay, Thai restaurants, they have to be open on Thanksgiving. So all the Thai places that we called to were closed. We're like, okay, if we can't have Thai, our next best bet is probably going to be Indian food. So sure enough, Star of India was open, and we had probably the best Thanksgiving dinner I've ever had, just because I didn't have to wash any dishes, I didn't have to deal with any of my annoying family, just no familial fights. It was basically just us talking about the problems that we don't have and enjoying each other's company, which was really, really great. It wasn't a forced feeling like so many holidays feel like. And about halfway through dinner, I realized that I actually had a Groupon for Star of India that was out in my car, so I went and got it and paid for my our orphan Thanksgiving dinner with a Groupon. So yeah, I left pretty satisfied. It was probably the best Thanksgiving I've had, just because it was so unconventional, and not because it was unconventional and there's something cool about it, but it was unconventional in the fact that there's no stress, there's no conflict, there were no dishes to wash, and I think that's those are the best kind of holidays. As far as my plans for this Thanksgiving, I don't know, might do the same thing again if Groupon exists, to see if they have a Star of India offer.
I work on large events around the country, and you always see the same kind of cast of characters a little bit. I work on big sporting events and parades and arts events and stuff like that. Well, the parade family is a really, really small one. You run into the balloon guy from Texas at like 5 parades a year, and you run into like the marching band guy, you know, a few parades per year. The float guys are the same, the fireworks guys are the same, because it's kind of, you know, it's not a huge community of people that know how to come in someplace, set up shop, stage a big event that rolls, you know, down a mile of street and then leaves town. You know, you don't have all those people in every single city. So my orphan Thanksgiving was at the Chicago Thanksgiving Parade, where I worked on that, I think, for 9 years. So the first year we all kind of like looked at each other and blinked and just went, okay, yeah, it's nice to meet you, that's cool. But by year number 2, all together, it was like, okay, everybody's really cool. We're all in town by like Sunday night for a Thanksgiving parade. So we started to create like our own traditions where, you know, we're all away from our families and friends. And so you're my new family, you're my parade family. And so let's kind of come up with like whatever we do. So we had like football night on Monday night, where we'd handle all the like Thanksgiving football watching and beer drinking and chicken wings and high-fiving. It's like, okay, that night's over, so no more high-fiving for the rest of the week. Do not give me a high five or anything. So Tuesday it was German food. There's awesome German restaurant in Chicago that we'd go do that. Plenty of beer steins and lots of German food. And it's like, okay, we're kind of getting this out of our system every single year. Wednesday night was like pure shots of, you know, just shots. Cause we'd always pour out to like our homies. If there was somebody who like it had been snowing or raining or whatever, and they couldn't go out and paint the street. If it's like paint the logo on the street for the TV cameras, okay, we're pouring one out for our homies. Like that's how we'd kind of honor the dead for that week, if you will. And then by Thanksgiving morning, it was just pure hangover, and everybody would go kind of do their job on Thursday morning. Well, the fun part about it is like, so that balloon guy from Texas that I mentioned, he was a very religious guy, so he would always want to like say a prayer. It's like, okay, that's awesome, go for it. And then you'd get to know kind of like everybody. There was a guy named Joe who had this massive porn collection. So every year you'd only see him like, you know, it's like there's Porn Joe, and you'd kind of see how his collection was going. Cool side note, by the way, parade balloons, Ernie and Bert can never be separated. You can never have Bert alone because he's too mean, you know, kind of. You can occasionally, you'll see an Ernie from time to time, but they like only can appear together, which I love that little tidbit. And Santa was always fun because it's like, okay, you knew who was going to stiff everybody for the bill for a round of shots. You always knew it was like Peter from Vegas was, he's never going to pay a bill ever, ever, ever. And so you'd never get stuck with things. And you'd know, I knew everybody's, you know, everybody's names, except for Santa. Santa, this poor guy, like lives his whole year with, he's got the beard, he's a Santa guy, he makes bank on, you know, November and December, and it's the same guy, and he can never shave his beard, and I never knew his name. So it was like, oh, sad Santa, poor Santa, Santa's paying for the bill again, oh, what, you know. So you knew everybody, everybody was really nice, everybody was really cool. We created our own family for the week. You wouldn't, you know, you'd bump into them from time to time, like up for 5 minutes on an event day somewhere else during the year. Then that was the time we got our family together and would celebrate, and I think we did it really right, and we did it up, so it was all fun.
First of all, I'm not really an orphan. I was born in New Mexico, so I'm kind of an orphan, but it was actually my second Thanksgiving dinner of the night. My friend Laurel Nelson had a party at her house. She had, probably say it was about like 7 or 8 people. She lives up right behind the Capitol, so there's a nice view of State Street going down and real nice lights and stuff. She cooked everything. There was a maple syrup bacon turkey. Like, I don't know, it was pretty cool. And then all your sweet potatoes and your mashed potatoes and stuff and green beans and yeah, just a bunch of friends from snowboarding up at Brighton, like that whole community. One of our friends who works for a snowboard company was there. It was pretty cool. Ended up drinking lots of wine. So I'm just recalling from memory from a year ago, a little bit toasted, but yeah, that was fun. Nobody had ever cut a turkey before, randomly. Laurel's a Canadian, by the way. Kind of cool story. So nobody had really ever cut a turkey before, and drunk Tim decided, what the hell, and I cut my first turkey that night, which was my second turkey of the evening, and I did a magnificent job. I had seen it on TV, so I was pretty hyped to do that. I sat on the porch, smoked some stogies. It was extravagant, I don't know, just a nice evening of friends getting together. You don't really see that happen too much. It's kind of just like the family feel, but you can say a lot of things you wouldn't normally say around your family. It was snowing outside too, so it was nice because we all got to go hungover snowboarding in the morning up at Brighton, which was, everything always kind of comes back to Brighton if you're in the snowboard community.
We here at Slug would like to wish all of you an awesome Thanksgiving. Thanks for listening to the show and putting us in your homes and in your ears for the past 2.5 years. Thank you for once again listening to Soundways from the Underground, and for all things Slug Magazine, visit us online at slugmag.com. Jeffrey Stebbin is going to be coming back into the studio soon to talk about all of the best delis in the area, and we want to hear what you think. You can either send us an email to soundwaves@slugmag.com or call and leave us a message on our automated voicemail line at 858-233-9324. That line's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Hit us up and let us know where you get your favorite Reuben or your favorite club sandwich. We just might play you on the show. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and produced by Gavin Sheehan. The associate producers are Esther Moronio, Alexander Ortega, and myself, Dan Nalen. The executive producer is Angela H. Brown. The theme music, performed by Lindsay Heath, recorded by Mike Sasich. And main logo and art design is by T-Done, and technical design is by Kate Colgan. Be sure to fire us up again next week. We'll be talking about the Sketch Sundays art events. We'll be talking to Yelp about those great delis. And we'll be talking about the Adopt the Native Elder program. Thanks for listening.